Welcome to the Soul Mama Podcast, where we have deep and honest conversations about healing, awakening, spirituality, and wellness on this sacred journey of conscious motherhood. We ask how we can walk this path in a way that nourishes, elevates, and heals us and our children. We deserve space and time to slow down and tune in to our hearts, to heal ourselves, and to honor our highest callings. It starts with us. I'm Nahanda Truscott-Reed. I'm a mother, holistic wellness coach, writer, and speaker, and I am passionate about all of the ways we can raise our consciousness and come into more alignment and power as women and mothers, so we can heal the past and make more empowered choices for the future. Our stories and voices matter. It is my intention that these conversations inspire, motivate, and move you on your own Soul Mama journey. I'm so honored that you're here. Hey, Mama, I hope you are well. Welcome back to this week's episode of the Soul Mama Podcast with me, Nahanda Truscott-Reed. And today I'm going to be bringing you my conversation with Chloe Pierre. So Chloe is the author of the book Take Care, which is a wellness guide for Black women's well-being. She's also the founder of Thyself, which is a wellness platform that seeks to include communities that have otherwise been excluded from wellness activities and experiences. In this conversation, we speak about Chloe's journey into motherhood from being quite a tumultuous start in a relationship that didn't feel stable, and to now being a single mother, an entrepreneur, an author, and how she manages to juggle all of that. She speaks to calling in the support that we need and not being apologetic for that. But she also talks to the fact that breaking generational cycles doesn't mean staying in a relationship that's toxic. So there are so many moments of consideration here for women listening who are on a motherhood journey and are trying to figure out how they can juggle it all. Chloe really reminds us that actually our priorities is our own wellness, and actually finding what spirituality means to us on that path can be a really helpful way to ground us in that, and so much more. So I really hope you enjoy this conversation between me and Chloe. Enjoy. Welcome, Chloe, to the Soul Mama Podcast. It's a pleasure to have you here. How are you today?
I'm doing good. I've just done the nursery drop. Now it's back to being an entrepreneur.
The mom juggle, you know, is exactly. Always real. And just to give a bit of context, I spoke to Alexis Lee, who was a guest on this podcast, and I always ask guests, who else do you recommend when we're talking about healing, when we're talking about motherhood, when we're talking about wellness for women of color specifically? Is there anyone else that I should be aware of that I should speak to? And she was like, you have to talk to Chloe Pierre. And I was like, And when I realized and researched and read your book, I was like, of course, this is in direct alignment. So first of all, 100%. Congratulations on your debut book, Take Care.
Thank you. Thank you.
I would love to hear what moved you to writing that book.
So the book came out last year. It's actually out in paperback version right now. So as of February 2024.
Yes.
And I started my business, Thyself, in 2018. And that came about because my life was in a very different place at that point. And I'd actually gone through a breakup, but there was no sign of my son at this time. And my life just changed and I could feel it changing. I was just turning 30. There was a lot going on. And I knew that it was a pivotal point in my life. And I just knew that I couldn't do anything disastrous or rebellious. I had to dig deep. And by digging deeper, I found well-being. I found self-care as a concept. But I noticed that it wasn't very representative, especially across social media, just anywhere, really. And there were books out there, like I've got bell hooks here. You know, I'd heard about Audre Lorde, but, you know, it wasn't like ingrained in me. And it definitely wasn't ingrained in my peers. and it, in my closed circle, should I say. And I just wasn't surrounded by all of that stuff. So I went on a real mission to do that. By doing so, I created Thyself, which is all about making wellness inclusive and accessible. I guess what we're really known for as well is just our tone of voice, which is like completely direct. Like there's no sugarcoating anything. And also laying claim. So where people might pick up yoga or other wellness practices is actually laying claim to the origins that it comes from, the people that it comes from, the places that they were found. And that is something that just isn't in the industry. Even now when I think, oh God, should I be doing this? If loads of people aren't doing it, does that mean it's viable? Is it a business? Is it commercially savvy? So I created this business, and through that, I guess my world just opened up. My network opened up. Mm-hmm. I discovered people that I'd never heard of. I'd seen people that I have seen, but I never felt connected to them in any way, shape, or form. Within all that, I was approached to write a book, and I said, it's definitely something I want to do, just not right now. Thank you very much.
Right.
And I should have stuck with that, because then the pandemic happened. I then got into another relationship with an ex-partner, got pregnant, and actually that was very like abusive and aggressive.
Oh, I'm sorry to
hear. I had to leave. So in that process, I'm still writing the book and doing my best to hold on to not even my sanity at that point. It was just hold on to the business, hold on to the book, hold on to everything, and keep what is on the external side going. And we'll deal with the rest later. And, you know, keep myself safe enough to deliver this baby safely. So the book came about at such a wild time for everyone, but especially me. But I think now, looking back at it with hindsight, it's what kept me grounded. It kept me really in touch with my purpose on this earth, the people that do matter to me, and that is Black women and women of colour as a whole. I think that I will always be riding for Black women and women of colour. That's just what I want to do. It makes the most sense. And I'm very much about legacy.
Yeah.
Other people's legacy, cultural legacy. And when I think about mine, this is mine. And that gives me purpose.
And I loved reading that. And thank you for sharing that, honestly, because I think sometimes we have this perception when there's, you know, a public journey that's happening specifically around wellness or healing or self-care, there is this expectation that the person on the other side is going to be like some enlightened guru who has found all of the answers and, you know, is spouting this wisdom from the other side. And I think we put pressure on ourselves if we're in that conversation, we're in that space, and we're trying to hold a light for others. We put an immense amount of pressure on ourselves to be able to live up to a standard that's not actually realistic. It's not grounded in reality. And you were going through a really tough time, it sounds like, you know, in terms of your relationship and the transition into motherhood, which in and of itself is
a lot.
A lot, exactly, and can turn your life upside down. And I think what you describe in terms of having that golden thread, that purpose with having the writing as a practice during that time was almost like a healing and a wellness practice for yourself to be able to come back to what is the bigger purpose, what's the bigger mission here, and then creating something that could be part of that legacy.
Definitely.
And I think that that's such an integral part that it might not look like a book for everyone listening. It might not look like something that's even externally going to be seen or received by anyone else, but it could be something that you come back to that grounds you in that moment of turmoil where everything else is doesn't make sense, to come back to that piece of who am I? What am I here for? What do I want to create? What do I want to bring for myself and for others? You know?
Yeah. It's also a memory of a point of life. And I think it's really great to have these kind of relics of like the different parts of who you are and to see that growth. We're meant to be growing as individuals. We're meant to be growing as women.
Yeah.
And it's really nice to be able to look at that and see where I was, see what I was hoping for, and to kind of measure that as being success, really. And I feel like when I read it now, I still get emotional. There's certain parts of the book. So the advocation chapter, the chapter about motherhood really does make me cry. I cried recording the audio for it as well. But now I just feel really proud. And I never thought honestly, that I would be on this side. When I was writing that book, I was in survival mode. Mm. So to be now on the other side, to see that I actually could get through and I did get through and how good life is, it's positive. And I just hope, even if it's one person, I said the same thing with myself, if I can help one person and not make sure that one person out there doesn't feel alone,
yeah,
and that they feel recognized and they feel safe within the something that I've built, amazing. I've done my job.
Of course. And I want to bring us back to that motherhood piece, because we talk about the upheaval and the overwhelm and almost like the crisis of identity that happens on that transition, which is obviously the work that I'm so passionate about supporting women through, because I don't feel like we're ever prepared. Like, there's no one ever saying to us, you know, you're going to need to take care of yourself on a next level, because there's going to be this emotional, spiritual, psychological upheaval that happens in your life that you're going to need space to process and integrate, right? So that you can still show up for the everyday demands of actually being a mother to a newborn child as they grow. But that motherhood chapter, you said it makes you emotional even thinking about it. What was it like writing that, and what was motherhood like for you?
So obviously I was writing at quite a traumatic point in my life. Motherhood, or at least pregnancy alone, is quite a traumatic state. And I don't always mean trauma as being a negative. It just means that it's manifesting something different in your body. You know, I think we can put certain connotations on things, and, you know, trauma is seen as a negative. And obviously there's so many parts of it that can be. But when it comes to motherhood, I didn't see it as negative. I felt as if the noise and the environment that was around me was negative. But what I was building and what kept me safe and safe within myself, the psychological safety, was just knowing that I am creating life. I have the best intentions, and that is what I lead with.
Mm.
That was a massive part of the book. Writing it, I started writing that chapter before I had my son.
Mm.
And then I finished it once he was earthside. And I mean, I was in the thick of it. So it was before he turned one. It was trying to figure out how to maintain being a businesswoman, being a creator, being an author, and still being a mother.
Yeah.
Finding my identity again when it came to like my friendship groups as well, because I didn't want to be like a symbol of like pity or, you know, what I'd been through as such. And then also finding myself, you know, we talk about it in terms of our clothes and our makeup and stuff, but it's way deeper than that. And I think we all know that as well. But it's just trying to find certain parts of ourselves that we can put together, at least for the outside to see that we're, you know, polished, we got it all together, that kind of thing. So in the book, it tries to, I guess, help people as they're going on that journey, just giving them questions and prompts that ask themselves to help keep what I think is their identity intact somewhat.
Mm.
So if you're asking yourself these questions over and over again at different parts of your pregnancy and parts of your motherhood, then hopefully that can help, because essentially I didn't have any of that. I had to create that framework myself. And some people say there's loads of resources out there, but the thing about resources is that you need accessibility to it. And not everyone has that. Yeah. Yes, we all have the internet. Sometimes it's like combing for information.
Yeah.
And then it's seeing yourself within that. And that's part of the big disconnect, especially when it comes to online. So I wanted a space that Black and women of colour could come to look at things like motherhood, ask themselves about certain practices, or make themselves aware about certain practices that could be done within a certain time range that could help their journey.
Yeah.
And I think things like that supported me, and I guess hopefully it can serve other people.
I think when we create from the place that we need, it actually is going to speak to way more people than we ever expect, because we're never alone in the things that we're struggling with. And I think because there is so much common ground and universality in the transition from, you know, maiden to mother. And I've started to question those archetypes recently as well, because I do think as Western psychological constructs. They do serve a particular narrative of how women have grown. And that doesn't always relate to Black and brown women, because
exactly,
maidenhood and all of the tropes that we expect of it in terms of innocence and joy and childlikeness has often been denied for Black women because of the circumstances to do with white supremacy and capitalism and circumstances that you would have been raised in economically, potentially, would have meant that you would have needed to take on responsibility financially at a younger age, would have meant that you would have been privy to certain conversations, or it might have meant that you were raised by a single mum. And so you had oversight of some of that adult burden that perhaps other races are shielded from until later in their stages of life. And so I often find that women are going into motherhood not even really having embodied that maidenhood. And so there's almost like a tension within of, now I'm into this other scope of responsibility, but there's perhaps resistance to that because you've been doing it for time and you don't want to be doing it anymore, and you don't want to be doing it in the way that you've seen it being done. And so all of these things are coming to the surface. And I think you're so right that when we look to spaces online for support during motherhood, the narrative that's overarching is the white middle class narrative. And so that has been much of my mission and my work, is to actually share our experiences and our stories, and to shine the light and create space for others to do so as well, so that we realize that our stories are still valid, they matter, that our voices are important, our experiences are important,
they resonate as well,
and they
transcend also our race as well,
of course.
So if we are encouraging of each other sharing our stories, it will transcend. It's just like our culture, it transcends. So the same thing will happen, and by that I hope that it'll mean that we are included more. I mean, the past is different sometimes, but I mean, if we kind of just own that space and own our own narrative instead of just sharing it out there, I think there's a difference between owning it and sharing it, and doing both simultaneously, they can coexist. I do think that there could be a difference. And I think for the next generations of women that come forward, like, maybe they have almost like a blueprint of how to be an entrepreneur and how to build, still build a home and a family. It can be done. You don't have to run yourself in the ground to do that. You don't have to say sorry. You don't have to make excuses. Mm-hmm. There's going to just be so much more, of a blueprint.
And resource available, because that's the thing that I hear women saying over and over again. It's like, I can't do this on my own. And it's like, we aren't created to do that on our own. The responsibility of rearing a child should not be down to one individual. So having been in the experience that you're in now, in terms of you're separated from your the father of your child.
Yeah.
How have you navigated solo parenting, and where have you drawn your support from?
I was raised by my mum at some point in my childhood. I think I come from a lineage of single parents. And at a time in my life, I was actually really proud of that. Now I'm getting back to that. But there was also a time it felt as if something to be embarrassed about, like it was like this kind of cultural curse. But I think there's a lot to be said about the people that we're having children with and the people that we're choosing to have children with. And maybe that in itself is a curse rather than like the fact that we're all single parents. Because what I will say is that I am very strong, and I have had strong women to look up to. They are far from being perfect, but when it comes to motherhood and the responsibility, they do that well. What I think they have lacked, and what I can see through the generations, is something that I'm very conscious of making a change with and not letting it just be. So they're very responsible, and they take care of a good home, and they have beautiful homes, and they take care of themselves, and, you know, they cook so good, and they're so welcoming. But their self-care is very outward facing. So it's about, again, serving others rather than actually serving themselves. So then them being resentful is actually quite a massive thing, and it comes out in so many different ways, especially as they get older. So I'm very aware of that. So I don't get a lot of time being a single parent, and it means being really organized and having to ask for help. I've been so lucky to some degree that people have offered help. So I work with a creative nanny agency called Coco Rio. I'm one of their ambassadors, and they honestly changed my life. They are so supportive. They're incredible for my son. And that taught me as well that you don't have to just get help from one place. Mm. That also means that you don't have to be conditioned to accept certain behaviors because you're receiving it from a certain place. Mm-hmm. That things can be on my term, because I feel as if by having that single mother hat, people always treat you differently, and they think that they can treat you differently, and they think they can talk to you in a certain way. Sometimes that comes from the people that you've grown up with, right. People that you love, the people that, you know, you've held it in high esteem. And stepping out of that has probably been the best thing for not just my sanity, my self-care, but also just like my identity. And also my son, he gets to see that single parenting doesn't have to be so negative. It doesn't always come with those tropes. Like, if I'm honest with you, in comparison to a lot, and I'll say a lot, it's not some, it's a lot of the two-parent households that we're around, we're doing fantastic.
Listen, we have
we're
to speak
doing fantastic.
On it.
We do, and people do try and look down on me and they say stupid shit, if I'm going to be honest with you. Like, oh, how do you eat? Well, what do you mean, how do I eat? Like, how do you eat when you're like, if you're a single parent, you're holding a baby? Well, you put them down, you know, you put them down, or, you know, you pay for a nanny, or, you know, you eat at a certain time, you just figure shit out. Like, ask me how I manage a business. That's really important. That's really,
yes,
really important,
exactly,
you know,
exactly.
For other women to know, especially other single parents, that they can do it. But yeah, I'm really proud because, yeah, we are doing freaking well. Like, my son has like 5 bikes. What person with 2 legs? Why do you need 9 bikes? You know,
I love that for
why
you.
Do you need to take over like my house with your toys? You know, why do you speak so well at 2.5 years old? Like, why do you know certain things? Mm. How does he know how to express his feelings? Like, you know, how do we get to go on holiday?
Mm.
As many times as we do, like all of these things, I'm really grateful. So what I will say is that there are two parent households that aren't doing so well and that they're not happy.
Right.
And I took ownership of my happiness and took ownership of my son's future by saying no, because I don't care that I'm doing it by myself, or I'm not prepared to be with someone and just show that vision, especially as a Black woman, especially as a Black family, if it comes to trauma, because I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that. Everyone likes to say we're breaking generational curses, but you're still upholding it.
Right. That part. And I think we need to speak on this. I think it's important because I was raised by a single parent. My husband was raised by a single parent. And that's a lot of my formative years before we were serious. It was triggering to me to think that he would stick around beyond pregnancy.
Yeah.
Because in my mind, I had already set up my household with that expectation. Like, I don't expect the man to be there. And this wasn't even something that I was consciously aware of. But even the friends that I had around me, the place that I grew up in, I grew up in Brixton, I went to school in Peckham, that no one knew their dad. So that whole conversation was like, what are we planning to do? It was such a challenge for us both to try and build something that we hadn't seen.
Yeah. And people say, well, there are Black families out there, then why are they not sharing their frameworks?
Right. So there is so much in this, because there's the pressure of the ones that you've described who are holding up a picture perfect ideal that is serving, you know, one surface level of like, okay, I've broken the cycle of single parent households and now I'm in a partnership or I'm in a marriage, but it's actually still toxic and it's therefore not healthy or helpful for your children or yourself. But then there are the ones who are scared to leave that because they don't want the negative, you know, stereotyping that comes with what happens if I'm doing it on my own, or I can't fathom being able to do it on my own. And actually, the women who I've seen who've made a conscious choice that, you know, this is not serving me or my children, they are actually thriving in ways that they've given themselves permission to not compromise. And so when I've spoken to those friends, I'm like, okay, yes, of course, there's the practical things that you now have to account for or outsource. And you've spoken about things that you've needed to pay for. There comes into that the economic availability for some women who aren't able to pay for that and therefore do find that more of a struggle, of course. But the peace, like there is no price on your peace. Exactly.
And the more you have peace, the more energy you have for other areas. It's like that saying, like, I mean, if one area, if something is draining your energy in one area, then you're not going to be able to get it in another.
Exactly.
So you do need to be able to like work on that, compress it or just completely eliminate it so that you do have the energy for the things that you want to do.
Exactly.
And yeah, I am not, we don't have like a living in partner and I'm not with someone, you know, in that traditional household vision, but then I have more time to work or I have more time to seek joy, which then means that I have more energy to or more vision to find things that do work for us as a family. You know, I'll be able to see past certain things, certain facades as well, you know. Like, so I do feel comfortable in the support system that we have. Like, thank God for the UK government because they were on their last legs in terms of their relationship with me. I mean, they are on their last legs anyway. But the childcare that came in, that I was like, okay, you get a chance now. Yeah, because I was paying out of my own pocket. And, you know, my son's father thinks that because he puts money, which I had to fight for, within the typical system that we all know, CSA, I had to fight for that. And because he does that he's doing a great job. And I could say, yeah, I should be grateful. I don't think so. Why the hell should I? You should be taking care of your child that you made, that actually you wanted.
Right.
I'm really glad now that we have like a great system. We've got Coco Rio, which I'll happily share a discount code
because
they are amazing. Like, and not just mums, but also like parents, guardians, they are incredible. It's on my profile, my LinkedIn, and I try and talk about them a lot because you get people from so many different backgrounds. If you want your kids to learn different languages, you could do that. They're very artistic. So if your kid's into drama, singing, sports, they can link you with like a match. I've met an amazing Nigerian nanny. She's British Nigerian and she's just like part of the furniture now. And we've only known her since January. And her name is Miss Chi. Miss Chi, I love you. And it's just amazing. And then his nursery is very supportive. And that's what matters, you know. And then
by the village.
Yeah. And also by that, it teaches the people that are in my family that I can't really change how to work with us better.
Yes.
And how to treat us the right way because they have a vision of it now.
Yeah.
They don't just get to go off what they used to know.
Right. So I'm hearing the boundaries. I'm hearing the standards.
Yes. And there's something about paying for things yourself and getting outside help that does help with boundaries when it comes to family members and generational curses and all of these kind of things. It has. And it's something that I would pay over and over again for. Because some people will say, £25, I'm not paying for that. But my child is worth £25 an hour.
Of course.
And my piece is worth £25 an hour.
Yeah. And it gives you those spaces where you can then take back for yourself the energy that you need to be able to pour into these other things. So
100%.
You said that the most important question is really, how have you been juggling this whilst running a business? So let's talk on that. How have you been doing it?
Honestly, childcare helps.
Mm-hmm.
Enforcing certain boundaries at home as well.
Right.
It's hard. My son's two and a half and he's at that phase. So everything, even though he knows the deal at this point, he's very smart. He's just pushing boundaries. So, you know, it's having certain setups at home, having places that I feel as if I can work in. So it might be a physical location that I find incredible to work in.
Nice.
And yeah, just pulling on your community. I think one of the biggest issue is for me is hiring.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always been that delegation piece. And because I was so reluctant to do it.
Okay.
So I would say making sure that you have the right team around you is important. If it's not the team, then it's a network. Mm-hmm. And those don't have to be huge amounts of people. It could just be literally people on the one hand, the same with your team. Like it doesn't have to, it could be you and one someone else. Like I've got an incredible VA that has helped me through so much. And she's still like a crux as well, like an emotional support. She's incredible. And that's what helps me manage business and also having time to figure out what my direction is. Last year was a little bit like, just do anything and everything that comes your way. Whereas this year, I'm not about to be burnt out. I'm definitely prioritizing joy. I'm trying to do now what I've been trying to tell everyone else to do.
Okay.
Because trauma was so present in my life. And then I went straight back to work. So last year was like work heavy, but now it's about joy. So now it's about me figuring out the things that are going to support me. It's opening myself up to love and doing the work in those areas for the things that I want to build.
And so what is your vision for thyself?
Yeah, so thyself is building itself out. So I'm trying to scale it up. So it's much more of a media platform. So within that, there'll be the membership space. So if you think of like a Goop, but just related to Black and women of colour, people of colour, and anyone that likes to be included within that net as well, I think is really important as well, because it's not always what we look like that defines us as people. So I just think having that representative platform is really important. Doing more events, making sure that they're regional is really key. So that is in this kind of scale up plan. And again, I don't have a family that can help me with these things. I wasn't born into a family of business owners. There really is no ground to step on or anything to run with apart from what I learn and what I consume and what I believe I can do. So that's what this year is about, scaling out, believing that I can do it, seeking out the people that can help, the right people that can help. And yeah, seeking joy, even in work. I want to feel that joy again, because when I was doing thyself, we started in 2018, everything felt like joy. Dealing with trolls online felt like joy. It was joy. And I want to get back to that.
Yeah, I love that. I have been in business for 5 years and I left corporate feeling like I would never be able to manage being in that kind of environment where I'm not in my own autonomy and having to look after two children, because the stress of trying to bust my backside to get back for nursery pickup and then trying to pump whilst I was breastfeeding and then waking up five times a night, but still having to show up at 9 o'clock in the morning and then being in a team which no one understood because they were all mostly white men. And I felt like I constantly had to apologize and excuse myself. And I was just like, this is not good for my mental. I need to pour into me. And that's when I changed and, you know, pivoted and decided to start Soul Mama. But during that, the learning curve has been so steep because I've not come from a background of business. I do not come from a background of money. So even the worth piece of like, what do I charge? How do I want to work with women? And it was a real tussle between really understanding what my heart is wanting to do and not trying to build a charity that is not actually serving me or my family. And so after having these kind of pauses away to really reflect on like, what is it that I'm trying to build and how is it that I want to feel? It's really helped me to be able to understand the two things that you mentioned, networking and the team.
And no one talks about the team, you know.
I was doing everything. I've literally just hired my first member of staff this week. And the relief of like being able to share a vision with another person and being able to say, this is what I'm working towards. Does this make sense? How do we do this? And it's just like, oh my gosh, Nahanda, you've been doing this on your own this whole time. Like,
And then now you have to share that knowledge.
Exactly.
And then now you have to nurture that person so they can absorb it and do the best that they can do. It's not easy. And again, no one talks about this kind of thing.
Exactly.
But that's what a business and scaling up and doing all that is. It's not always the glamorous parts. It's not what everyone sees. It's not always just about funding either. It's how do you create in-house the kind of setup that you need to help this business take its first steps or take its next steps.
Yes. And you know what I'm hearing when we're having this conversation is the parallels between that idea that we have to martyr ourselves in motherhood, we have to sacrifice or struggle, that we have to do all of these things on our own without asking for help, without appearing to be struggling. And it's the same mentality that we bring into business, or at least I can speak for myself. That's how I came into business. I must be doing it all by myself because I need to figure it out because everyone else has the answers, but I don't have the answers. And it's like that mindset of being in a place of not trusting yourself. I heard you say that, trusting yourself, trusting the vision, trusting your purpose. And it's the same thing when we bring these children earthside. It's like we have called them into being consciously or unconsciously. We need to trust not only our bodies to be able to birth them, but our capacity to be able to mother them in the best ways that we know how.
Yeah. And that's the thing as well. Motherhood shouldn't always just be sacrifice, because we're meant to be guides to them. We're not necessarily meant to be their everything. We're meant to be their guides. And I think navigating motherhood that way has been a little bit more helpful.
I know that.
The relationship that my son and I have, it is a friendship. We argue, we bicker. With a 2.5-year-old.
There's some honesty in that.
Oh, there's a lot of honesty, and there's a lot of like ownership and getting him to advocate for himself and find his voice. And but it's a relationship that we're building, not a hierarchy in our house. So yeah.
Which culturally, coming from, I think you're Caribbean, right?
I am.
Right. So that is unheard of in previous generations.
Oh, yeah. And people say that to me, well, when I wouldn't do that. And I'm like, great, but I don't want what you have.
But I think it's important to recognize the things that we're carrying into motherhood, either because we've been modeled a particular framework in our own childhoods, but the noticing the things that we're releasing, and we're saying this no longer serves the vision that I hold for my motherhood. And for me, that level of intentionality and awareness is all we can ask for from ourselves and from each other, is that we take a moment to say, okay, my parents would have given me some gifts, or whoever it is that raised me would have given me these gifts. What parts do I want to move forward with and build upon, and which parts actually didn't serve me do I need to release? And this having a voice, developing a voice, and being able to actually have an honest conversation with our children, to be able to apologize when we've done something that hasn't been up to par. And in your book, you describe a lot of wellness practices and their origins, and the irony in the fact that if you go into a typical wellness experience in London, they're usually very expensive, overpriced, led by usually a white slim woman, and usually has a class that is not diverse at all, whether it's yoga, meditation, Reiki, sound bowls, we can name cacao ceremonies, like from A to Z, you find a particular demographic who's been targeted for these types of places. And so as a black and brown woman going into these spaces, you can quite easily see how you might not go back, or why you might not feel like this is your place where you belong or where it's for you, despite the fact that the origins of most of these medicines, healing practices, modalities have come from black and brown countries.
Even if people, for example, wanted to argue even against that, the notion of well-being in a Western world defines a certain person trying to access it, when the wider well-being scope, what well-being actually says it should be doing, just like much laws, is that it should be protection for everyone. It should be access for everyone. It's practices and techniques that anyone should be able to access. So what they're doing by having these type of businesses is going completely against what they say they know
and
what
foundational principle.
Yeah, what they say they're experts in. How can you be an expert in something that you've picked up on this trip or picked up very quickly? And you're not even considering how each person that accesses it experiences the full package. How can you be an expert then? Because an expert is someone that is continuously learning, is constantly reframing their mindset so things work better. If you're a wellness practitioner and you find that, you know, you've got this kind of feedback and you don't know what to do with it, then that's something for you to look into, because then you can't then say that you're an expert. It just baffles me.
And so how does thyself create experiences or events that feel different?
We go about making it as inclusive as possible. It's considering inclusivity from every single type of lens, things that most people can't be asked to do or don't know how to do. So they think, because I don't know how to do it, I just won't do it. Or I'll say it's inclusive just to put a sticker on it. Mm-hmm. We don't do that. We actually go into who's coming, how do we cater for them? You know, if we're going to post this post or figure out this part of like this concept within well-being, why don't we do the full research? Why don't we then, you know, create some framework that we can teach our clients about this, and framework that we can then help consumers digest? So, which is quite hard when I employ people, because they think, oh, wellness brands, so cute, so nice, we're just going to throw these cute pictures up. And I'm like, no, we go deep into it. So everything that I do is about research and data and insight. So every single post you see, every single collaboration that we do, every single event that we do is all about digging deep and figuring out how things work, why they work, how people react to them. How do we take care of people once they've had this experience as well? Mm-hmm. It's really important. And if that means that we say a certain size to do that, then so be it, because that's what this company was built on. If I want to build a company that is just going to be commercially sound and make a lot of money, then I'll do that, but it just won't be this one.
And in terms of your own personal wellness practices, you mentioned things like meditation and journaling and your own personal relationship with that in your book. How have those practices shifted or changed in your motherhood journey?
So I just think in my journey as a person, I'm smiling because it's something that I wanted, but I just didn't want to do it the way that I had been told, and the way that I was almost forced to do it. So it's been big for me, but to build on spirituality, so not talking religion, because spirituality and religion are two different things. Mm-hmm. They kind of interlink, but they're two different things. And I got the meditation down, then I discovered breathwork and obsessed with it. I definitely delivered my son through breathwork. I didn't push or anything. He just literally came out by himself. Natural birth, no stitches, nothing.
Well done.
When I was going through the trauma at 4 months pregnant and literally running out of the house in literally what I had on from his abusive, I just call him the biological at this point. And it was breathwork that got me through that, I would say, because I didn't have that much support at the time. Breathwork, but now I always felt like there was a void in my journey, and I think it's spirituality. So rediscovering that has been quite key to me, but also actually like going through the practice right now has been, it's just been really good. Like I feel more whole in myself already, and I'm just kicking this journey off. So it's looking at my relation to things around me way more, seeing how we all kind of survive in this ecosystem instead of just focusing on well-being and wellness as a concept, is having a relationship with, you know, what I cast as the higher power, and building that relationship and not doing it from a stance of it being like extraction or asking for things, more so about like developing an actual relationship, one that I build with my son, by like asking him questions, even if he can't answer them, but one day he's going to. Same thing with having that relationship with God or say a higher power or, you know, the environment around you. Like I'm a tree hugger. I'm not mad at it at all. I always like to be barefoot in the house, outside. That's always been a thing. So just leaning into that, like little things that you remember about yourself as a child is what spirituality looks like to me now. It's being comfortable with it, not needing other people to be on the journey with me. Yeah, it just makes me feel whole. So I would say that's a part of my wellness journey that I didn't always feel comfortable speaking about, because I didn't really have anything concrete to run with. Whereas now I feel like I'm growing something and I'm happy to share it, but I'm also very honest with the fact that I'm just starting the journey. So
I appreciate that. So that journey of spirituality that you describe, what led you to it?
Well, I grew up within a very Christian, typical Caribbean Christian household. And I was always asking questions about the religion. And then the more I did research into the colonial history. It's like, this is brainwashing. And I just thought there has to be something outside of this. It's not to say that there isn't a God. It's just, why do we have to worship it in this way?
Right.
Why is it a worship rather than a relationship? Why is it always asking for things rather than, you know, again, growing a relationship? So I would always ask these questions from being very young. I went to like a Catholic primary school, Catholic secondary school.
Mm-hmm.
And I just always felt like it was quite rigid in the approach of learning and the relationship that you have with God. And then the way that people would treat each other, especially in the places of worship, I'm just like, this is not right.
This is all right.
You just read the Bible and talking about all this stuff, and then you're behaving like this and giving people side eyes and looking at them like you're judging.
Right.
It's not to say that you can't, because we're humans, but you should do better. You should be aiming to do better. And I just didn't see a lot of that. So I felt very disconnected to religion and therefore spirituality, because that was what I was told spirituality is.
Got you.
Since Growing Thyself now, I've been able to read more, study more, understand things from a different lens. And being an adult, you get to choose what you want to do.
Yeah.
So I choose to do better, and I choose to look into things more and look into things that are going to serve me on an emotional level, on a spiritual level. So that's been my journey so far.
And I feel like the transition into actually deciding what you're going to raise your child to believe,
yeah,
I think really forces us to reckon with our own inner questions. Like, okay, there are some bits that feel right to me, there are some bits that don't. I need to make a discerning choice so that I know what I'm saying to my child. Like, for me, that was a really big turning point. And even now, I don't feel like I have all of the answers, but what I've been able to share is almost like, it's okay to not know everything. My son will ask me questions about death and what happens when we die. And I'll say, this is what I believe. This is what I think. This is what I feel. What do you think?
Yeah.
And it actually gives them space as children to actually realize that I'm not prescribing something that is rigid and didactic. Like, there is space for us all to find our ways. And that's what I believe spirituality is. It's the gift of being able to find your way to source, to connection.
Yeah.
And so it sounds really beautiful that you've been able to carve out that space to be able to do that work for yourself and for your son.
Yeah, eventually I want to be able to have that as well. And I think it's possible for certain things to coexist. The same should be when it comes to spirituality and religion. So why can't he know about all in depth?
Yeah.
Why can't we spend time in all in depth?
Yeah.
And then he can make his choice. I'm okay not being religious at all, as long as I believe I'm living by a certain way that, again, as a legacy piece, I'm proud of.
Right.
I don't want to go to bed and not be proud of what I've done.
Yeah.
And also, again, that connection to source. Why would I act or behave in a certain way if this is a connection that I'm building and that I'm prioritizing?
And I don't think you can actually bring a child from, I call it like the other realm, like the spiritual realm, into the physical realm and not have that deep yearning to understand or to connect with or to resource yourself more from that power. Because We did not do that on our own. We did not make that child, grow that child, and deliver that child.
It's a phenomenon.
It's a phenomenon. Like, it's a phenomenon.
It is. Like, people say, oh, well, it's really straightforward. But think about
no,
it.
No, who plans that?
No one. About it.
Right, exactly. So I always ask guests, what is the thing that you are proudest of yourself in your motherhood journey so far?
I would say it's the fact that I'm quite agile and flexible and open. It keeps us going as a family of two. It keeps us open to the possibilities of growing our family in so many different ways. It builds on our relationship as well. Like, I want him to be able to speak to me and for us to nurture that as like a priority.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's having those things, that ability to just be open and nurturing this like level of like freedom, because I think from freedom comes joy.
Mm-hmm.
And freedom comes legacy. And, you know, from freedom comes power. There's so much that comes from freedom. You can't always say the other way around. You don't get freedom through power necessarily. You get power through freedom. You get joy through being free. And that's what's important to me.
I think there's something so radical about recognizing that that can be a moment by moment practice.
Yeah.
That we get to embody that freedom and therefore we get to model that freedom, which then creates space for our children to be free.
Yeah.
I feel you on that legacy. And so for women listening who might be on that pathway of single parenthood or in partnership, but are on a pathway of self-care and wellness, what's one gift that you would want to give to them?
Be open. So be open to change. Be open to learning. Be open to what seems like a negative in this moment. Be open to hope. And be open to yourself. Open yourself up. You know, don't be rigid. I think when things happen in life, it tends to kind of bring tension and get us to kind of close up. And try and keep that openness, because, again, that is your path to freedom. That is your path to knowing who you are. And also, this is a little bit off the cuff, but give a fuck about what other people say. Like, do you? Do you? What feels right to you? Do you? Because if the day comes that you have to be able to explain why, you're going to be honest with it and it's going to make sense to you. And that's really all we should be living by.
Thank you, Chloe. It's been a pleasure hearing some of your story and some of your experiences. And for women who want to get in touch or follow you and your work, where can they find you?
I'm always open to discussing, again, learning. I can be found mainly on Instagram. TikTok is my new distraction. It's always good for people to look at Thyself. There's so many resources there that you can look at. We also have the online website. Our journals actually are really where it's going down.
Beautiful.
And to get first access to the journal posts, I would say sign up to our mailing list. So okay. The Thyself newsletter, it's really somewhere that I'm like pouring a lot of love and effort.
Beautiful. So I will put links to all of these things in the show notes. But for those who just want to hear your handle.
Oh, yeah, sure. So I'm Chloe Pierre, LDN, on every single platform.
Perfect. Thank you so much for your time today. It's been a real pleasure. And I look forward to us collaborating on some wellness events, 100%. Perhaps for mamas going yes. forward. That would be yes. a vibe. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to that conversation between me and Chloe. I really enjoyed hearing how much of a growth and evolution journey that Chloe's been on in the short years that she's been a mother, and how intentional she is about raising her son to view her family and their family as a model for freedom and for joy and for not taking that on as being in any way negative or as a deficit. It really challenged me in some of the things that I had gone into my partnership believing about single motherhood and it being this thing that I needed to overcome in my own parenting. And I was really inspired by the way that she was so honest and transparent about the parts of her life that have felt hard. I think often when we're speaking about wellness from the position of being a space holder, there was this pressure to kind of appear to have it all together and to know exactly what we're talking about. And what I got from Chloe was just this really refreshing honesty and ability to own the fact that some parts of her journey are just beginning and that she might not have all the answers, but she is working with what she has and she's doing it well. So I hope you feel moved to connect with Chloe. And if there are any questions or anything that comes up for you, perhaps you are on the path to solo parenting, perhaps you are a single mother yourself, and there are conversations that need to be had around this, DM me on Instagram at Soul Mama Journey. I would love to hear from you and I look forward to touching in again soon. Until then, stay blessed. Take care. Thank you so much for listening to the Soul Mama podcast. You can head over to soulmamajourney.com for more resources and ways that I can support you on your journey. I'm most active on Instagram, so you can follow me at Soul Mama Coach. Also, get in touch with me via email at nahanda@soulmamajourney.com. I read and respond to every single message. It takes me ages, but I really love hearing from you.
Please take a moment to rate it wherever you've listened. And if you feel like you've got some value from this, please share it with another mother. I appreciate you. Thank you.